这个 facility fees
although they didn't announce it goes to the limit.
Anyway, I see the facade is there. So, about the Holy Dom, let me start with a true story from my own experience. It's the first time that I had the good fortune of visiting Sri Vrindavan Dham. This was in the year 1975 at the annual festival, the Gaur Purnima festival, the first part of which is held in Mayapur, and then the second part after Gaur Purnima in Sri Vrindavan Dham. So, never having been to Vrindavan before, but having heard so much about it in the few years I had been in ISKCON, so it was a very exciting time. And there were many, many devotees. This was actually the first, not the first year of such a festival. That festival had been going on, I think, since 74. So this was maybe the second year. At most, the third year. When Prabhupada had really established it as an institution that should go on year after year. But that year that I came was really the first big festival. The first time that many devotees were coming at once. Not only from the United States, but from Europe, from Far East too. There were some Chinese devotees from Hong Kong, I remember. And from Africa, so many places. So it was very exciting. And in Vrindavan, we were conducted on the parikram by Gurudas Swami. Gurudas is no longer sannyasi or really even active member of ISKCON, but he nonetheless is active. He's to publish a book. It may already be in print, or I think in this year, 2004. Because in those days, from his joining ISKCON in San Francisco in 1967, he was always taking photographs. So he had so many, many photos. And I've heard that now he's publishing a book of his photographs of the old days in ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada. And Gurudas was also a good friend of George Harrison. He was part of that crew of devotees, Shamsundar, Malati, and Gurudas, and his wife, Jamuna Devi. They came to London, and that's a whole adventure in itself. Starting of ISKCON in United Kingdom in London, and they're meeting George Harrison and the other Beatles. So at this time in 75, Gurudas was sannyasi, and he was conducting us on our parikram. So he brought us to Sri Radhakund. And Radhakund is rightfully understood by devotees to be, of all the places you visit in Vrindavan, of all the pilgrimage sites, Radhakund is the very culmination of everything. That's the most, all, of course, all places in Vrindavan are, in one sense, transcendentally equal, because all are Krishna's abode, but still, within the spiritual world, there are rasas, and so these flavors are understood by those who know the science of rasa to be comparatively greater and greater, or less. And Radhakund is just the most rasic place of all. So, Gurudas brought us there. We saw Radhakund. It was just amazing to see. I remember that just seeing Radhakund was such a transcendental experience. Seeing in the holy waters these big turtles. And Gurudas was telling us, Prabhupada said, these were great sages. not ordinary turtles, but great sages who had the fortune just to live their whole life in the nectarian waters of Radhakund, Srimati Radharani's own bathing place. So after some explanation, then Gurudas, he said, all right, he kind of went like this, like, just jump in. So we were all, you know, we had no background, no training. So that's what we did. We just jumped in as if it was a swimming pool. And, you know, devotees were diving in and splashing and shouting and even wrestling and things like that, making a big scene. And, of course, the regular residents of Radhakund, they were quite astonished to see this. Nobody behaves like that there. People, of course, they bathe in Radhakund, but it's a very sacred thing. So, then, that was our last pilgrimage site for that day, Radhakund. When you go to see Radhakund, you'll see Govardhan and some other places, especially around Radhakund, there are the place where Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami wrote the Chaitanya Charitamrita. There's the places of the different Goswamis. We saw those places also. Shyamakund, of course, but Radhakund was the end. So after our tumultuous bath in Radhakund, then we all got on the bus and went back to Krishna Balaram Mandir in Vrindavan. It's about a 20-minute drive. And then we came back. And so Gurudas Maharaj, when he arrived here at Krishna Balaram Mandir, he was told, just when he arrived, Prabhupada wants to see you. So he came into Srila Prabhupada's room, and Prabhupada was looking at him very sternly. And Prabhupada said, why you have kicked Srimati Radharani? So this was just, you know, too astonishing for us. Of course, we felt we heard about this later. He only said this to Gurudas Maharaj because he was the conductor of the tour, so he was responsible. But everyone was just astonished how Prabhupada knew this. Because just when we arrived, he was already waiting for Gurudas. And so this little story, I think, goes a long way in helping us understand the nature of Sri Vrindavan Dham, that it is Chintamani Dham. It is not a place of this world, it is a place of pure consciousness, pure Krishna consciousness. And the devotees who are immersed in this Vrindavan consciousness, like Srila Prabhupada, wherever Srila Prabhupada, with Prabhupada it was exactly true what Sri Advaitacharya said about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that wherever you are, that is Vrindavan. So wherever Prabhupada was, he was absorbed in Vrindavan. And Vrindavan is it's a state of transcendence, a state of consciousness. So he knew instantly that by our foolishness we had committed an offense at Radhakund. And he gave chastisement as soon as we returned. So this is Vrindavan Chintamani Dham. Chintamani, what does this word mean? Chinta, money. Money means gem. So the whole of Vrindavan is, there's a beautiful book actually by Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, which is titled Vrajaviti Chintamani. Vrajaviti Chintamani. And this is a description of the whole of Vrindavan, all the holy places in Vrajabhumi, in their spiritual form, as one sees them with eyes smeared, Premanjana Charita Bhakti Lochinam, eyes smeared with the salve of love. As Vrindavan actually is. And it's so beautiful because there, everything is described as being made of this money, this gemstone. Even the trees, the vines that are going up, the beautiful descriptions of in the Nila Kunja. Nila means blue, so all the trees there are blue gemstone. And then there are vines of ruby, which climb up the sapphire blue trees. And in the trees there are birds that are also of gems, and they're singing. Well, such a beautiful place, the real Vrindavan Dham, as seen by the pure devotees. So, this is mani. Mani means gem, and chinta means consciousness. So, these are gems of pure consciousness, pure Krishna consciousness. So now this brings up an interesting point. First of all, yes, that Vrindavan in India, that is the place where Krishna makes his appearance in this material world. That place, that sacred place, is different from any other place on this earth. Of course, Sridhar Mayapur, we should talk about that also. Mayapur is no different from Vrindavan. But there still is a difference. What is the difference? That Vrindavan is called Madhura Dham and Mayapur is called Audarya Dham. Otherwise they're equally the same. But this distinction is in Vrindavan, Madhura Dham. Madhura means sweetness. So that is a place where Krishna displays his most sweet, intimate pastimes, his Braja Leela. But the thing is, not everyone who is qualified, like we were talking about seeing Vrindavan as it is, who is qualified to do that? As the Brahma Samhita says, only very, very few rare souls in this world are able to see the eternal pastimes going on in Vrindavan. But Mayapur Dham is called Audarya Dham. Audarya means munificent. It means magnanimous. Namo Mahava Ninyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate. Lord Chaitanya is the most magnanimous incarnation of Krishna. So in Mayapur Dham, it is very, very easy. If we take the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it is very, very easy to become qualified to be a resident of Vrindavan now. You see, this means Audarya. So much mercy is being given there. So that's why Prabhupada wanted us to go to, in this Gaur Purnima festival, first to Mayapur Dham. First to go there. And there one is getting so much mercy. We visit the holy places in the Navadvip Mandal Parikram, we chant Hare Krishna in that holy place. And then we are being blessed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with the what is called Adhikar, with the qualification to then go to Vrindavan and take advantage of that place. So, Hare Krishna, Audarya and Madhurya. These are the two dons. So yes, it is those geographical locations, those places on the map in India, Vrindavan, Mayapur, very, very central for devotees to visit, at least visit, make pilgrimage there, and to render service to Krishna there, to chant the holy names of the Lord there. Because in these transcendental dhams, the devotional service is many, many, many times enhanced. You see? Little devotional service we do in such a holy place, it counts so much. So this is all arranged by the mercy of Krishna. At the same time, having said that, at the same time, because the nature of the holy Dham is a nature of transcendental consciousness. So as we see Srila Prabhupada, as I told you, wherever he went, wherever he was, that was Vaikuntha. That was Vrindavan. I remember the first time that I was in Prabhupada's presence, having some direct interaction with him. Actually, technically speaking, it was the second time, but it was the first time I was in Prabhupada's room, and Prabhupada was there. And this was in Boston ISKCON Temple, 1972, in the summer. So I had the opportunity to do some service for Prabhupada. So I came in that room. And I remember, when you opened the door to enter Prabhupada's room, it was really like stepping into another world. Just crossing that space of the door. And you could feel the atmosphere. The atmosphere itself was different. You see, just like you can feel if you're next to some, near some powerful electric generator. You know, they have these power stations. These big high tension wires, and they step up the energy, so they have these power stations. And if you get close to one of them, you can just feel the change in the air, because there's ionization from the electricity. There's an electric field, and you feel it. So it wasn't an experience like that. It wasn't like stepping into a storm. It was something else. It was stepping into a Vaikuntha field. And you could just feel that. The purity, the intense purity in that room. And the air, you could somehow, the air, the space looked different. It was glowing. It was Hare Krishna. It was sparkling. It was as if you could see your Brahma Jyoti. So that was the power of Srila Prabhupada's presence, because he was fully Krishna conscious. Therefore, where he was, that was the abode of the Lord. And he writes about this in a Bhagavatam purport, explaining the meaning of the name Dham. So we say Vrindavan Dham, Mayapur Dham, Goloka Dham. Dham, we understand, means the abode of Krishna. But he explains in this Bhagavatam purport a little more about the meaning of Dham. That is, it is the personal energy of Krishna. So he goes on to say that actually everything is Krishna's energy. And this is very, actually, amazing. That everything is Krishna's energy. So, the material world also. Helsinki also is Krishna's energy. This building we're in is Krishna's energy. This is, now, some of you are here. You have been to the temple, you may be thinking, this is a different place. You see, a different address, a different place. But, actually, everything, the ISKCON temple, this room, every place in the city, every place on this planet is within Krishna's energy. So, actually then everything is Krishna's Dham. He is here. He is here also, right here in this room. Not just because we're here talking about Krishna, chanting Hare Krishna, but he's always here. But it is a potential. He's here in a potential sense. So, just like within the stuff of this this wall here, or the floor, this concrete, whatever is used to make this, there is, for example, water. There's water in this. But we can't access the water, but water is there. And scientists know the way to bring the water out, to bring the moisture out. So similarly, in the same way, in potential, Krishna is everywhere. And the devotees, they know how to bring out the presence of Krishna so that it becomes obvious. And that's done in a very simple way. We've been talking in our seminars, satsanga. Devotees come together for association. And what do? In that association? Krishna seva. They serve Krishna, Bhagavat. They hear and discuss the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam. Nam, they chant the holy name of the Lord. So if one is doing these four things, then the fifth item is there. The fifth item, Vrajavasattu, to be in the abode of Krishna, that is manifest. And Srila Prabhupada explains that in this one very interesting purport. That wherever Krishna's service is being done, these activities of devotional service, then that is the Lord's abode. Because, why? Because there, the energies of the Lord are acting spiritually. It's like we have prasad, which will soon be distributing to all of you. So what is this prasad? Well, in the beginning, it's rice grains, it's some dal, beans, it's some vegetables, it's some flour, very ordinary things that you can buy anywhere. And anyone can put these things together, cook them, make preparation. But when the devotees do it, they do it in Krishna consciousness. So then the potential, the real potential of these items, these ordinary seeming items, they manifest as prasadam, as transcendental food, not food of this material world. This is transcendental. If we take this foodstuff, then our lives are also transformed from material to spiritual. Prabhupada once explained to his disciple Rebati Nandana, who is asking him questions about prasad, technical questions about, you know, offering prasad, and when exactly does the offering become prasad? Is it becoming, you know, when we ring the bell and chant the mantras? And Prabhupada, he smiled and he said, actually, everything is prasad. You see, from the Uttama point of view, everything is prasad. Everything is Krishna's energy and meant only for Krishna. But, he said, but because we are not in that consciousness, we have been so conditioned by Maya to see everything as for our sense gratification. You see, this is so strong in us. And we all know this, you see. Even after practicing Krishna consciousness for a long time, one may, speaking of prasadam, so one may walk by the kitchen and get a scent of what's being cooked. And then the mind says, oh, that's very nice. I would like to taste that. And then we have to beat the mind. You rascal, why are you thinking like that? This is not yet offered to Krishna. You see, so this nature to be a bogey, to be a sense gratifier, it's very deep in us. So Prabhupada said, that is why then we have this formality of taking foodstuffs that we have cooked for Krishna, and then offering them to Krishna. And then formally we say, after the offering, now this is prasadam. This is for our sake. This is a training for us. So that this tendency for sense gratification, animalistic sense gratification, will in time be cured. It is like a disease of consciousness. And it will be cured. So, Where this is going on, this transformation from material to spiritual, as we do when we're offering foodstuff to Krishna and it becomes prasad, or when we're engaging anything, any item that is manifest in this world in Krishna's service, it becomes transformed. Prabhupada said, Krishnaized. And of course, that example everyone knows, placing a lump of iron into the fire. So, conventionally speaking, iron and fire, what could be more opposite? Fire is hot, brilliant, blazing, you see. And if you touch it, your hand is burned. Iron is hard, cold, heavy, dark, you see. And when you touch it, you just feel some hard, cool thing in your hand. So what could be more opposite than these two? But if you place the lump of iron into the fire and let it sit there, then it will gain the same quality as the fire. And Prabhupada used to say, you don't believe, then touch it. And it will have the same effect. If you touch a red hot iron, your finger will be burned as much as it will be burned if you touch the fire directly. So any so-called material thing, because actually it is within Krishna's energy, and the potential of the Brahman potential is there. The background of that material thing is actually Brahman, the spiritual nature. Therefore, what is engaged in Krishna's service, as Gita says, Brahmarpanam Brahmahavir Ramagnao Brahmanahuttam, that verse in the fourth chapter, very nicely states that anything that is engaged in sacrifice, in jagya, in the service of the Lord, that also takes on the Brahman quality. And that Brahman nature, that is the nature of the Lord's abode, his dham, place of his own pastimes. So therefore, yes, where there is Krishna consciousness, where there is the pure intention to serve Krishna only, then that is also the holy dham manifesting. And therefore, in our ISKCON temple, like Prabhupada, he once gave a talk in Gainesville, Florida. Now, of course, there's a nice temple there, has been for so many years. But at the time Prabhupada was there, speaking in the university, who ever heard of Gainesville, Florida? And Prabhupada made a comment that I'm here speaking to you in a place so very, very far away from Vrindavan Dham. You see? So, Gainesville, Florida, or Helsinki, Finland. These are places are very, very far away, in one sense, from Vrindavan Dham. At least in consciousness of most of the people who live there. Who knows anything about Krishna? You see, in such places. But when the devotees are there, and they serve Krishna there, then that place where they're serving, that is the dham, that is the abode of the Lord, manifest. And we see in that place the devotees install the deities of the Lord. So like in the temple here, Sri Sri Gaurdatta, how they moved a little bit. And I understand after I leave they will move a little bit more. But after that reconstruction is finished, then they will come back to their nice new altar. So that is the spiritual world. So you see, this is again, speaking of audarya, munificence, magnanimous. These ISKCON temples spread out across the face of the globe. That is a manifestation of audarya dham. So we come to the temple and we are blessed. Blessed by the special mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and we get by that blessing the adhikar, the qualification to enter into the madhuradham, the confidential pastimes of the Lord in Sri Vrindavan. So this is the system. This is the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So it is, as we say, incumbent. It is the responsibility of the devotees. And Prabhupada used to stress this so much. To maintain that consciousness. Our great fortune, the spiritual world has manifest here, so the devotees then should maintain that consciousness. And according to Srila Prabhupada's directions, keep up his standards of pure devotional service in all of our activities. And in this way, Lord Chaitanya's mission will manifest more and more. You know, this mission is intended to spread everywhere. The chanting of the holy name is to spread everywhere. And Prabhupada even once said, he said, this movement can become so successful, spreading Krishna consciousness everywhere, so that everyone becomes Krishna conscious. Then Prabhupada said, then the age can shift directly into the next Satya Yuga. Because we know the prediction is for the next 10,000 years, Krishna consciousness will manifest. And Prabhupada said the saner section of human beings, at least those who are sensible, they will take up Krishna consciousness, Vaishnavism to some extent or another. It will become the standard of the world culture. But then gradually, as the Kali Yuga goes on, so the karmic fate of this age is that it will become very, very, very degraded. It is, of course, degraded now. We can speak so much of the symptoms of Kali Yuga at our present time, but thousands of years in the future will become much, much, much worse. And finally, practically, a human being will not be a human being, but a little monster living at most. I've read in some Puranas, the age span will be something like 16 years or 20 years. Someone who's 20 years old would be ripe old man, you see, very old person. And he'll be lucky to be an old person, because people at that time will be cannibals. So, and very pragmatic, you know, very practical. So here's someone who's become old, too old to work. Well, put him in the pot. That's how it will go. And you see, these tendencies are already developing. They're already in the air. There's euthanasia, this idea when people get too old, well, put them out of their misery, give them an injection, kill them. This is being propagated. So in the future it will come to the point where, yes, not only put them out of their misery, but put them on the table. Why let all this nice food go to waste? Cook it up. And of course, there'll be nothing like countries anymore, just clans. You see, clans, you move a few hundred meters, there's one clan speaking one language, move a few hundred meters over to the next forest or next hill, there'll be another clan of people speaking a whole different language. You see, they won't even be able to understand one another from a distance of a few hundred meters. Because this is, you see, the effect of Kali is to separate. Warring groups, and this is how far it will go. And they will fight, there will be constant warfare between these different little clans, little family clans of runty people, you see, a meter high, a meter and a half high, they won't get bigger than that, with a big jaw and a low forehead. People say such people lived in the past, but I beg to differ. They're waiting for you in the future. Those cavemen. Those are the people of the future. And if we find their bones, that was from some distant past Kali Yuga. you see. But that form will, human being will degrade into that form. And there will still be devotees, but they have to be very careful. Because Prabhupada said, the nice, tender body of a devotee, that is considered the best dinner of all. So, devotees have to hide in the mountains. There's a place in the Himalayas called Shambhal. Years ago they made a movie called Lost Horizon about it. The place in the movie was called Shangri-La. And this was somehow derived from the Puranic reference to Shambhal, a hidden place in the Himalayas where that will be the last refuge of devotees. And from that place the Kalki avatar will appear. So at the end of Kali Yuga, Kalki avatar will appear. In the New Testament revelations of John, St. John Divine, there's also a description of God will appear on a white horse. He'll have red eyes, and he'll ride across the earth with a sword, killing everyone. So this is Kalki avatar, exactly described in the Puranas, same thing. And he will ride at his horse. It's a winged horse, and it will move at the speed of mind, as fast as thought, across the surface of the earth, and he will kill everyone. But by killing them, he liberates them. And this cleanses the earth, and then the new age, Satyuga, will dawn. An age in which everybody is Krishna conscious. Wonderful age. It's practically, earth at that time is practically a heavenly planet. But Prabhupada said it is possible by this Krishna conscious movement. If everybody becomes Krishna conscious due to the spreading of this movement, then it is possible that the age will just shift directly into the Satyuga. So you see, in this way, the Dhamma of the Lord may manifest in such a wonderful way to change the whole face of the earth. But even if that doesn't happen, the opportunity to become Krishna conscious will be there. The place of the Lord's devotional services, his Dham, his transcendental Dham, will manifest in so many places around the world, giving people the opportunity to become Krishna conscious and go back home, back to God. So that's the mission of this movement. So are there any questions? Yes?
Guru Maharaj, concerning the residence of the Dhamma, at the same time there are these statements that every living entity in the Holy Dhamma is completely spiritual, like that, and, but on the other hand there are so many questionable characters, and I also heard comment Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, I think he was in Parikrama or something for 1 month in Vrindavan, and after that he said that something like, I didn't see any devotees or something like that.
Yes, well, this is a bit mysterious. But the Holy Dhamma is protected. Mayapur Dhamma is protected by Praudhamaya. Vrindavan Dhamma is protected by Purnamasa. This divine energy. So, by the arrangement of this protective energy, then, yes, it may appear, as you say, that questionable characters have come to stay in the Holy Dhamma. But that is appearance only. It's like in a very valuable painting. So you protect that by framing it with a glass cover, you see. So then dust, if you don't clean the glass, then dust will fall on the painting, on the surface of glass covering the painting. And it may look like the painting is dusty, but it is not. So this is the Praudamaya, it's called in Vrindavan, Purnamasi called. I'm sorry, Praudamaya in Mayapur, Purnamasi. the dove, an invisible covering. And so the impurities collect on that. So yes, if our vision is worldly, then our vision of the dham will be obscured. But that's not the holy dham. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, in making that remark, that is a warning to the rest of us to be very, very careful who we associate with. You see, within our level of vision, you may be thinking that some resident, some person whom we take to be a resident of the holy dham, is advanced and has something to offer us. But you see, one should not trust the senses. Okay. Anything else? Yes.
Maharaj, is it possible for an ordinary Western sinner who never met Prabhupada to get on the level seeing everything spiritual as spiritual dharma?
When you ask, is it possible? Then the answer is yes. It is certainly possible.
In this life?
Yes, in this very lifetime. Prabhupada would even say, even within a moment, it is possible, the possibility is there. Now, whether that possibility becomes fact in our life, that's another question. Then we have to look at the individual, we have to look at his sincerity and Krishna consciousness. But certainly the possibility, the great possibility is there. If we take to, you see, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this is his mission. His mission is to make us Krishna conscious, to bring us back home, back to Godhead in one life. So if we take what he is giving, to us through Srila Prabhupada, through this movement, if we take it, that's what Prabhupada lays stress on this, as it is, if we take it as it is, then yes, then it is certain that we will become Krishna conscious. If we don't take it as it is, you know, then there's some question of, that is also good if you even just take a little bit of it. You see, one drop of the ocean of nectar is itself an ocean of nectar. But we should become bona fide devotees, bona fide disciples. And take as it is given. Okay? Yes?
I was wondering, you have pictured a quite dark age, people with different candles. Thinking, if you could comment, how can we avoid that? We're so predestinated. Can we do something to avoid that time?
Well, one thing we can do is to get out of this. The grip of samsara, material existence, which is keeping us so that we're taking birth again and again and again. Srila Prabhupada said if we continue this taking birth here, then yes, that is our destiny then. The time, the future becomes worse and worse and worse, and we will be obliged to see it, to experience it directly. So the thing is, we need to understand that these different yugas or ages, as described in the Vedic scriptures, they're giving facility to our different material desires. You see, so in each different age, then a different culture manifests. A different dharma, a different culture. So, the Kali age, this age, is where all the lowest desires, the most abominable animalistic desires, which in early ages are suppressed. You see, there's very strong moral systems in earlier ages. And such things that are happening now are totally forbidden. I remember one of my godbrothers remarking that if a Vedic king, a king from Dwapara Yuga or Treta Yuga, if he would somehow appear in this age, then my godbrother remarked that he would go around establishing Dharma with a machine gun. He would just kill everyone. Because people from the Vedic standard are so sinful. You see, so in those times they would just not be permitted to live. Such as, or they would have to, they would be banished to some jungle region, you know, some island somewhere. That, okay, you go there and stay there. Like we read in the Treta Yuga at the time of Lord Ramachandra's pastime. So generally the earth was a pure place. Generally everyone was following religion nicely. But there was one island called Lanka out in the ocean where all the Rakshasas were. Man-eaters, cannibals, they were, and when they tried, it was all right when they were there, just there, but then when this Ravana was trying to expand his authority and his influence, especially when he took Sita from Lord Ramachandra, then it was, you know, Lord Ramachandra made his mission to destroy that place, Lanka. So, yes, in Vedic culture, the things that are going on now, openly and plainly, we're just not tolerated. So why is it happening now? Because the Lord has reserved this time period for those desires, which in earlier ages were suppressed. Now they come up, and people are doing so many sinful things now, and it will just increase more and more and more. But they're doing things now that were never seen before. And they're thinking things now that will be done in the future. Already thinking. There's so many. You can sometimes see on the internet, you know, there's these sites dedicated to Satan worship and things like that. Totally insane things, and they just exist as images on a computer screen. But what people are contemplating now will become reality in the future. And this is how it works. This is the age for that. What you want, all right, you'll get it. Remember there was seeing an interview with one person from Austria originally. Vienna, and he went to India and he became a sannyasi in a Mayavadi line. He took the name Aghenanda Bharati. And then he went back to the West and he was trying to be some kind of guru and preaching his own idea of Hinduism. But he was a real character. He was a real rascal. Actually, many years ago, His Holiness Sridhayananda Maharaj had a debate with him. This person was very intelligent. He knew Sanskrit. But anyway, he was defeated in the debate. But he was a real rascal. And so in this interview that I read from him, he was talking with a reporter about Kali Yuga. And he was saying, it's Kali Yuga and I'm very glad of it. This is the Swami Aghenanda. I'm very glad that it's Kali Yuga. And the reporter said, why are you glad it's Kali Yuga? He said, because I like salami. I like to eat salami so much. And if I was, you know, if I was a sannyasi in an earlier age, then that would be totally forbidden for me. But I can do that now. I can eat salami and still be a sannyasi because it's Kali Yuga. And that's very true. I mean, I was amazed by what he was saying because that's exactly what the Shastra says, but in a condemning way. It's not a good thing. But he was taking it to be a good thing. So he's a real Kali Yuga character. And that's why there's Kali Yuga. So, anyway, the opportunity to get out is there, to get out, to not take birth here in the material world at all, go back home, back to God. To change the course of history, though, then we have to change the desires of the people of the world. And that's what I mean. It could happen. We could just directly go into Satyuga before the end of this Kali Yuga. It's possible. But it would mean that everyone's desires would have to change from impure as they are now to pure. And that's quite a challenge. All right then, I think we have to stop now. I have an appointment at the airport. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So, bye.
Alright, next time we'll be on the airport.